This is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and next time I'm buying a seat on the airplane, it's very cramped under them.
Yes, it is, and it wasn't easy to hand prop the space shuttle either.
Yeah, I imagine.
Anyway,
we are joined by Mary Vary and Ty Irwin from the U.S. Forest Service. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You guys got to really be hopping right now with the wildfires out in California.
It's busy.
And so this is a very timely subject, you might say, out for fire safety and such.
Yes.
And this has been a record year, I think.
Boy, I don't know. We've had some busy ones. 1988 was huge. 94, it happens every now and again.
Yeah, and it seems to be California's, you know, when it's not shaking apart, it's burning down.
I can agree with that. I've got a fire in Redding, California, where I work at it, and it marched right into town last night.
Oh, yes. No.
Wow, and so it's not showing any signs of slowing down.
It was 113 yesterday and 11% RH, and we're looking at 109 today and about 15% RH.
Oh my goodness.
We've got our hands full right now.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. So you guys are scrambling to import smoke jumpers from anywhere.
Yeah. But I'm here as a smoke jumper, so I'm here promoting the program.
Okay. I could be a smoke faller. That'd probably be about as good as I would do. You could just take me by the feet and whack me on the fire, you know?
No.
We could think about new technology. Yeah.
It's a new technology, yeah, using old radio people to put out fires.
He did hand prop the space shuttle, so.
That's impressive. That's right. That is impressive.
You got to be careful when you do that, but even more careful as a smoke jumper. You take a lot of risk jumping into an active fire zone.
Yeah, we do. I mean, the technology has advanced a lot. We're currently transitioning to the square parachute from the year round, and we're in a 10-year phase. We're in year three of that, so things are really evolving rapidly for us, and we're really looking forward to this transition.
What kind of training do you go through?
It has to be intense.
It is. I've been smoke jumping since 2002. And started out on the round. I transitioned in the spring to the square. Loving every minute of it, but it's a 5-week training program. We throw in a sixth in our program, and basically we take you everything through classroom training to our units training, which is we teach you how to exit the aircraft and do letdown procedures from trees if you land in one, parachute landing falls, and simulations for flying the square parachute before we even begin to put you in the aircraft.
Now, typically, how close to the fire line do you guys like to land?
About a week ago, I spotted a mission where we put smoke jumpers within 50 yards of the fire. But most of the time, we put them within, we try and put anywhere from a half to a mile or so. It's all about, at that point, it's energy management, because our work begins once we get on the ground.
Right. You don't want to be exhausted before you even get
exactly
there. Exactly. But by the same token, I'm assuming you're always going to land on the upwind side of a fire.
We try. Yeah, we usually try and take the high ground. We prefer to have the high ground, land on a ridge, some meadow, some opening that gives us a better advantage to actually seeing the fire. We always want to know what that thing is doing and where it's at. But we do have... We've had instances where we've gotten into situations where we've given up the high ground and had to kind of maneuver to get away from it. So we have stuff, procedures in place for that.
Yeah, I hope so, because I imagine one of the biggest variables is the fire creates its own turbulence and its own updrafts and everything, and you really got to be careful not to get caught up in that.
Correct, and that's the thing. Most of what we do are small fires, single tree, acre or two in size, stuff that a handful of us, 8 to 10 of us, can manage without too much trouble.
Okay, so like on the larger fires, you're not jumping in, you're going in on the ground.
Sometimes we do that. Usually it's a single resources, but it's not unusual for us to do a tandem load where we'll take in two aircraft of anywhere from 16 to 20 smoke jumpers, and then we'll go and go after larger fires as well.
How much gear are you carrying?
Currently over at if you come to our booth at the IFP at the pavilion over there, it's about 100 pounds when I exit the door of the aircraft in just equipment alone. So my exit weight is 265 pounds.
Oh my, that's about what I weigh on Wednesday.
And anything that they take in, they have to pack out. So
wow.
It's we know it from the aircraft. We know it's bad if they're asking for a chainsaw, because they hate taking chainsaws because they have to carry them out.
Right, right.
Well, the other question I have is, what happens to the parachute when you guys get on the ground?
Well, basically, we pack all of our gear up. We have a pack-out bag, and all that equipment, the jumpsuit, everything that we don't need that is not essential for fighting the fire, we put it in our pack-out bag, and that gets staged in a safe location, and then that's generally where we're going to have our fire camp around for the fire, is there, because that's where all of our cargo is going to go. But that's not always necessarily true, where if the fire is a mile or so away, we'll take what we need, we'll take our food and water and sleeping bags with us, and we'll stay in proximity to the fire, so if it does move on us at night, we can readily get up and go and handle it.
Oh my.
It's risky business up there. You've got terrain going against you, you've got
a wind change everything.
The possibility of firestorms and all kinds of loose embers flying around. This is not a user-friendly job at all.
No, it's not, but it's also very rewarding. I've been to places from Alaska all the way down through Montana and Idaho that are absolutely picturesque, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
I imagine homeowners love you guys.
Yeah, I've gotten kudos just for having a truck of hardwood floor to be delivered to a homeowner last year in Santa Rosa in the Napa Valley area, just because they would have gone to the bottom of the list on delivery. So I went out of my way just to make sure that their hardwood flooring was delivered on time.
Oh, cool. I have family that lives not far from Santa Rosa.
Yeah, that was interesting times.
Yeah, yeah. They talked about the smoke and everything and wondering. Interestingly enough, it's my brother and sister-in-law. He bought a house on a golf course specifically because they water golf courses and the fire danger around the house is a lot less.
I like golf courses. They're perfect for that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to, I'd jump a golf course and no problem.
And take the clubs.
and that's the thing is we will use open areas like that for our safety zones, because we can actually ride out fires in meadows that are that size or larger without having to deploy fire shelters, which we don't want to do. And we can just sit there and watch the show go by.
Right.
You just talked about that, fire shelters and having the danger of being exposed in a very dangerous situation there. Is a creek a safe place to be in a fire situation?
It depends upon how narrow the creek is, because what happens is it's not unlike a chimney effect. Is if you get a fire in a tight, narrow canyon or drainage, all that heat and energy is now channeled up that drainage, and it doesn't matter how deep the water is, because I can't hold my breath underwater very long.
Right.
But those are factors that we have to take in, and it has happened where firefighters have been entrapped and they've had to run for creek bottoms to escape a fire that went around them. It turned out very traumatic for them.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't know. I just can't imagine being on the ground and fighting a major forest fire. The videos that I have seen from last year, there was a guy driving a car, and it was nothing but flaming trees on both sides. And I'm thinking to myself, man, there's no way I'm driving through that, much less
fighting
that fire.
At that point, you don't have a choice.
No, you know.
You're running for your life and hoping your car doesn't catch fire along the way.
Really?
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is I try and avoid that stuff. I try and do being a line, not quite a line officer, but someone in charge of folks on the ground. I really focus on their safety, because in the end of the day, it's all about, I think about the families and everybody else who's looking at me for my decision making, to make the right decisions to make sure everybody gets home at the end of the assignment.
Right, and in so many instances, these fires are so big, it's not like you're going to just land there and put it out.
No.
You're going to battle.
This is going to be a long...
Hope you can contain it, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been talking about fighting the fire. What can people do to help prevent the fires?
Oh, there's a whole plethora of things they can do. First is your campfires, campfire safety. The second is your vehicles, the catalytic converters, the exhaust, smoke spark arresters on the motorcycles, things like that. You mentioned the guy that the YouTube video. By that time that the person was driving down the highway, they should have probably evacuated 4 hours prior. If somebody comes to your house and tells you you need to evacuate, you need to evacuate. Because if you don't, our firefighters are busy trying to protect you rather than fight the fire. So that diverts their energy. Cannot stress enough, defensible space, clear zones, and a good roof if you live in the woods. And I live in the woods in a log cabin. So I have a defensible space, I have a good roof, and I have insurance, and I have an evacuation plan. So that's the best thing that people can do is pre-plan. And when we ban campfires, we don't do it to be mean. We do it because there's a fire danger. So
and because so many of us mismanage our campfires.
That does happen.
Yeah.
So we, in our booth over in IFP, and I hope you come over, or, you know, anybody out there, come over and take a look. We stress above all fire prevention, the steps you can take to prevent the forest fires, because unfortunately, a large percentage are still human caused.
Right.
And it would be a great benefit if the only fires that we fought were lightning.
Yeah.
And we have those.
Yeah, but they're a lot less than humans.
Yeah.
Anyway, this has been the Forest Service, and
I'm Fast Eddie.
I'm Digital Dave, and this is EAA Radio.